chaos, as every pupil in Mrs. Farnsworth's fifth grade class knows, is the disordered state of unformed matter and infinite space that existed before the universe got smooth. That's why little Larry Patang, who instead guessed that it was the natural integument of sofas found in the tropics, was remanded to the after-school study hall of Dr. Deleterium for 10 weeks.
Dr. Deleterium.
Once his bruises healed and his hair grew back, he was again permitted in the classroom, so long as he didn't breathe the air. And that's how he grew accustomed to wearing scuba gear at an early age, and subsequently became a celebrated deep-sea diver. Until he got caught in a chaotic underwater vortex off the coast of Bemidji.
Now, where is Bemidji?
Minnesota.
Ah, thank you.
Having long since forgotten the practical application of chaos theory that Mrs. Farnsworth drilled into her students' heads, often with an 18-inch auger, poor Larry drowned. Chaos theory, of course, provides a framework for understanding irregular or erratic fluctuations in nature, like underwater vortexes or adobe hats. It is speculated that, had Larry been wearing an adobe hat, he would have survived the terrible submarine turbulence. An adobe hat is to chaos what a vacuum is to order. And that's a Hoover type of vacuum, not the space a bit lean in the matter department.
Oh, yeah, I'd like one of those Hoovers any time.
Yes. Yeah. According to Mrs. Farnsworth, the study of chaotic systems was essential if her pupils were to understand the principles of order that underlie the patterns of all real systems, such as adobe hats or music. Music, however, is an example of order in chaos.
Ah!
What, are you skeptical there?
I'm not as skeptical at all. I knew that we were going somewhere with this.
Yes. It is composed of so many interacting elements that it is tremendously sensitive to even the tiniest factor. For example, the wet wind produced by a French horn player clearing her spit valve during rehearsal of the Farafangana Orchestra Limited of Madagascar on June 3rd, 1997... will ultimately affect the attentiveness of Lyman Yarnelli as he awaits his cue to take a string-based solo in the Mosquito Lounge of the Pandora Box Riverside Casino in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, later today. A sophisticated computer model suggests that if the French horn player clears her valve during the 48 measures of Tacit that open Smythe's Concerto for Lammergeier and Orchestra, Lyman will come in a beat late, vamp solely on a low B-flat, and not have the wherewithal to explore any melodic variations. But if she waits until the flute-only coda of Pemmicania, a suite for band by someone known only as composer D-141, Lyman will enter on time and play a riff so squirrely that afterwards the audience will be examining itself for brain damage. This would normally be proof beyond doubt that complicated dynamical systems are determined by their causes, proof that would even have Mrs. Farnsworth sitting up and playing scuba tag. But there's a fly in the orderly ointment, and that fly is called
Frau
Fractal.
Frau Fractal. Ah, yes.
You have a call.
Oh, you have a call. Well, I'll just listen then.
Fractal the fly, when it isn't dribbling pathogens onto uncovered nachos or sucking the lifeblood from a taper stuck in a tar pit, is a unique pattern left behind by the unpredictable movements of the world in motion, the confusion of a spit valve, the discord of an adobe hat, the chaos of nonlinear phenomena. And when these fractals bump up against complex dynamical systems, such as music or bowling, a critical point is passed, and their logical and predictable natures turn chaotic, like trying to fit the Sargasso Sea in a Gerber no-spill baby cup. The ancient Babylonians, he said, segueing improbably.
Yes, here we go again. I know this. Does this have anything to do with
it? It does.
I see.
There is a relevance here.
Irrelevance? Yes, I knew that.
That too. The ancient Babylonians, that is, those over 80 years old, tell of a mythical hero, Marduk, who slays Tiamat. And you can look this up. This is true.
I will look this up, because so far element D141 has me very much concerned that it might be Dr. Deleterium. I think that's element D141, Deleterium. Same as composer D141. I think those are related.
D141 entered into the equation in the 211th sesquicentennial.
I know, but now that we have Dr. Deleterium involved, I'm beginning to understand.
I see.
Yes. Now, you were saying about the segue, about the ancient Babylonians, those over 80 years old.
Tell of a mythical hero, Marduk.
Yes.
Who flies Tiamat, the cacophonous mother of all, and transforms her into the order of heaven and earth. Although that was the extent of their mythology, it apparently was enough of a constructive allegory to keep their civilization near the top of the world's best culture list for four consecutive millennia. However, what the Babs failed to mention was what happened next. Chaos, in the form of Mrs. Farnsworth's evil twin...
Now you're telling us what happened next.
I am.
Okay, that was kind of like an air colon.
Right.
Yes. Okay.
Chaos, in the form of Mrs. Farnsworth's evil twin Fiona, sticks the remains of Tiamat in a regenerative cryogenics chamber and revives her. Together, they seek out Marduk, who, following his murderous deed, vanished into a cosmic witness protection program. After years of searching, a tip leads them to Madagascar, and to a rehearsal of the precursor of the Farrah-Fanganna Orchestra Limited, where... during a lengthy baton cadenza in which the conductor prances about with his musical wand like a lunatic fencer with a hangover, the woman playing the adobe horn empties her spit valve, and out of the bell serendipitously pops the former hero himself. Imagine what kind of solo Lyman would play now. Suddenly the linear world becomes non-linear. Order is converted into chaos. Marduk is given a pair of cement shoes, jammed into a no-spill baby cup, and sent on a voyage to the bottom of the Sargasso Sea, and chaos theory is replaced by its evil twin, music theory. To liken music,
they grow on the music theory.
They do. To liken music theory to chaos is to have one's fractiously fractal finger firmly on the caffeined pulse of this 219th episode of Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar, a radically complex system in itself, whose incrementally analytic linearity regularly has chaologists chewing on their trouser cuffs, if only to somehow affect the initial dynamical response of Calvos.
I have no idea what you just said, but I liked it. I liked it.
Of course, it follows. It was very logical.
It was,
for me.
It was very, yeah. It's certainly what I will have to read through this again.
Certainly.
And for those others of you listening, one of you listening, these essays are all available on the website at calvos.org. So please,
at no charge.
At no charge whatsoever. Thank goodness. We might even pay you. But please calvos.org. Listen to, read these essays, show number 219, Order versus Chaos. What we just heard, that the essay took the entire length thereof.
Well, there were interruptions and suggestions for
was Beau Tum Trees by Mark Applebaum from Mousetrap Music, and right now you're listening to Champagne in Mexico City by Judy Dunaway, and that's what we're going to listen to for the next 4 minutes while we regroup here, because we are surrounded by boomboxes.
Yes.
And we'll explain that in a few minutes.
What might look chaotic at first blush, I'm sure order will be restored.
Wasn't that Chaotica? Chaotica's first blush?
Could be.
Could be. Thank you. Champagne in Mexico City. That's Judy Dunaway.
Played
on the... Oh, well, let's see. I think this one is for tenor balloon, but I'm not positive.
Ten or 11?
Let's see. Champagne in Mexico City, this is... just says balloons. It doesn't specify which balloon size was used.
I see. Now, normally when you think of balloon music, you think of the Hindenburg going down, but this is...
Well, the humanity!
Okay. Right. That's it. But this is... Totally different.
Yes.
Do you think we'll ever? Could we even dream of having her on the show?
It would be great. We'll have to see what we can do about that because it would be just dandy fun. As today's show is about to be, our guest live in the studio today is Phil Klein. Phil is currently has surrounded us with tables on which are found 12 Sony. I think they're all Sony boom boxes. Some black, some white.
That's cream,
all
cream color.
Cream, is that beige? Is that like
Harvest beige.
Personal computer beige. And we played some of his stuff on the show before, including a couple of cuts from his Glow in the Dark CD. And he's going to do some stuff for us live today, and also he has a new as yet unreleased CD that we'll be hearing some cuts from. So that's coming up in about 15 minutes at the top of the hour. As you can probably tell, our show is music by unlikely instruments today. The first one was Mark Applebaum's piece, Bo Tom Trees, from Mousetrap Music, and that's for electroacoustic sound sculpture, Mousetrap, Minnie Mouse, Duplex Mouse Phone, and MIDI Mouse with live electronics. And
so what's unusual about that?
We just heard, because they're not in mass production yet.
Ah,
balloons,
yes.
However, are, but their use in the musical sphere, as it were, is not extensive.
Yes,
and let's just shut our mousetraps right now and listen to a cut from Peter Van Riper. This is Synchronies, and Synchronies was made with bicycle wheels with objects on them spinning. Synchronies,
yes.
By Peter Van Riper. Thank you. Synchronies. That's music by Peter Van Riper for spinning bicycle wheels.
One of the calmest pieces we may are apt to ever play. It is
ever on this show. Actually, we've sort of come down from a wild opening with the Mark Applebaum mousetrap stuff and Judy Dunaway's balloon stuff to this, and we're gonna sort of quiet it down even more so we can get into our mellow mood for a dozen boomboxes by playing the Cage Suite for Toy Piano.
Excellent, excellent choice.
Here it comes. John Cage, Suite for Toy Piano from 51 years ago. Performed by Stephen Drury.
Yes, him.
Yes. Thank you. John Cage's Suite for Toy Piano. And I wonder what it could be that they're hearing this on. Do you think it might be... let's have somebody tell us. That's Michael Mannion in the guise of Professor Sharp and Flats announcing that it's the New Music Bazaar on WGDR Plainfield.
I would have thought that would be evident to anyone tuning in.
Cybercast in real audio and Shoutcast MP3. Hey, and our guest is here, ready, headphoned, microphoned, and be-boomboxed.
Yeah, this is quite the setup, and we're not even in Studio Z, so we have everything. We are in surround sound, for sure.
Yes, for sure. Hi, Phil Klein, welcome. Ooh, well, you got to get your microphone turned up there. There we are.
Testing.
Okay.
Hey.
Welcome. Hey, you're on vacation, and then we put you to work.
That's okay. There's a sort of a trip coming up here.
Well, we haven't given anybody any clue as to your background and why you do this sort of stuff. Why don't you give us the capsule history of Phil Klein and how he got into doing it? You know, first of all, we should say that we've played stuff from your Glow in the Dark CD on the show several times. We played Premonition a couple of times. We played 96 Tears a couple of times. Holy City of Ashtabula we played. So people have heard your stuff already, and it's absolutely fascinating. Remarkable. How did you come up with the ideas? What's your background in terms of your sort of creation of music?
Well, that means I'm going to have to figure out how I...
Yeah, you have a few seconds to make it up.
Very roundabout, actually. I had an interest in music from fairly early on, but it wasn't particularly fostered or encouraged in my family, whatever. Even by the time I went to college, I was writing, short stories, poetry, stuff like that. And I was a pretty good rock guitar player. And I think I really wanted to be a composer, even then. I'd already been playing with tape recorders probably since, when I first got one when I was like 10 or 11 years old. And I would cut the tape up and put it back together again and stuff like that. But I just didn't, it never occurred to me that I was composing.
You mean nobody ever told you that you were, so...
That's true.
Yeah.
Intimidated
you?
I don't know. I was just having fun.
Yeah.
You know, it was really cool. I would get together, I had like two of these little... Remember those tape recorders that were like a little bigger than shoe boxes and played those little three-inch reels?
Little Iowas had these little tiny ones with three-inch reels on them.
They were amazing.
Yeah, and they had no capstan. They just, like, mm-hmm. the pickup reel dragged the tape through so that as the batteries changed power and you played the tape with a different reel, sometimes you're getting a little bit of battery.
Yeah, and I would do things like I remember recording Stars and Stripes Forever and playing it back. I would play it back on two of them and then onto a third one while playing the record again. So I was like phasing them and building them up and doing all that stuff. But I just it wasn't something I don't know.
You're kind of a sampling acousmatician, and
I was.
Know it. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Somehow, it was years later, after I came to New York to go to school, and I was a classical music DJ for a while, and then I got back into the rock and roll thing. I was in New York, and I was playing, and so this was in the days of the, no wave, new wave.
Oh, yeah.
We were all wearing black and playing art rock.
Art rock.
And it was sometime after that when it suddenly dawned on me that... It was almost came out of nowhere. I literally went out and bought 12 of these boom boxes all at once at J&R Music World one afternoon and just started doing this idea I'd been thinking about for years and years and years, which is what would happen if you massed very large numbers of tape loops in a live situation in the boom box, which was kind of, when did they invent boom boxes? Mid-80s, something like that. Made this much more possible with the little condenser microphones, and actually they're just much better machines than those old shoeboxes.
Right, right.
I tried that stuff with the shoeboxes 15 years ago, and it just didn't sound enough like anything to be worth it. Whereas now, there was an immediately noticeable difference. It was sort of like I could tell I had some kind of life in the test tube, whatever it was. Something was growing, I mean, it was feedback and distortion that was growing, but it sounded beautiful. But
we're going to hear some stuff shortly, something from the recordings and some live stuff. What's a good intro? We should play something so that you can teach us what we have to do you should suggest that we play something now. Should we play Premonition now to get people into the feel of... Let's do that. We have from the Glow in the Dark CD. This is a great one. You have to find this CD because you will not realize what is possible to do by rethinking masses of sound until you've heard the CD. Here it is for 25 tape players. This is Premonition by Phil Klein.
was Premonition by Phil Klein. We're sounding a little different because we're on a different set of studio mics now. Phil is going to do a live performance of Bachman's Warbler. That's for, what do you have here for that used to perform that?
Okay, I've got 12 mashing boom boxes, each of which are loaded with a blank 30-second endless loop, and a variety of harmonicas. I start off with two harmonicas, which actually for this particular piece happen to be one in A minor and one in G major, alternating between the two of them. As the piece moves along, basically what I do is I have a steady breath pattern. I start going into the first machine, and then as soon as I'm done with that, I start playing it back and playing the same pattern with the playback into the next machine and just sort of spilling over and over and over and over again until we hopefully build up a nice, slow feedback spiral. Which at some point, it's sort of like if you're very careful, you can get the spiral to move back and forth nice and slowly, like a nice gentle, Waikiki type of wave, easy to ride. But then at some point, it turns into Waimea Bay. You know, it's usually about the time you get to the end of the first row, or maybe when you're into the second one. Certainly by the middle of the second row, you cannot possibly hold the waves together anymore, and they just start crashing all around you. Then you start improvising. That's really how it goes. The first part is planned, but then you just sort of take a step into the wilderness. And this was the very first piece when I first got all the boom boxes. My idea had a lot to do with, admiration for both Brian Eno and Steve Reich. But I was sort of following that Reichian line of, come out to show them and it's going to rain. But at the same time, I saw the potential to do it live in real time, because as much as I love tapes, I don't really like playing with pre-recorded tapes. Mixing the two is uncomfortable to me. I was really interested in the idea that you could sort of make this system and do it live. So this, when I set them up in my room, the first thing I was thinking, I need a sound source. And I just happened to pick up a Marine Band harmonica and started playing, and that's what led me to write this piece.
All right, we'll get out of your way, and it's a big way to get out of, so we'll get out of here, and we'll just watch you work. Shame we're not on video. Phil Klein, Bachman's Warbler.
Is wrong.
The perils of live performance.
The perils of live performance just up and bit me. Try that one more time.
You don't have to worry. We'll edit this out of the show.
Yeah.
This is pre-take?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so. what that's called was I left the pause button on. Okay. One more time.
Thank you.
So it is possible to drive a boombox totally insane. We have certifiably mad boomboxes, 12 of them, in our studio.
Phil Klein, Dustin's Warbler, that is absolutely incredible. Well, you're inhaling still the dust from the old harmonicas,
I mean. I forgot to, yeah, you got to air them out first. It's like hyperventilating in an old attic when you bring out the old harmonica.
God. It is, I'm sure for the listeners listening to this rather than seeing it, I mean, seeing it is it's an incredible dance. It's a choreography beyond belief to see you moving from one machine to the other.
A yoga exercise.
Really. But on the other hand, I had to close my eyes at times and put the headphones on so I couldn't sort of experience what was happening in the room to see, you know, in my mind's ears what was different about it. And it is an incredibly different experience that way. The seeing of it almost says, oh, this is so exciting just to see. And then you forget that the listening part of it is so powerful, and it really, really is. We certainly would like to invite anyone who'd like to give a call here briefly. Oh, it's 802-454-7762. We're not going to be able to put you on the air, but we certainly will ferry your calls to Phil Klein, who's having a well-deserved drink of water. When did you first do that piece as kind of a performance piece in front of a group?
Am I on mic? Are these guys on? I see. A friend of mine started a performance series at a little bar on Avenue B called Mona's, and he had a nice little weekend performance and poetry series, and he asked me to do something for it, and I said yes.
Yes.
And then I thought, well, that's great, Phil, except you don't really have an act. And that was right when that was sort of what pushed me over the edge. This was in 1990, I think. And I went and bought the boomboxes, and, you know, a couple months later when it was time for the gig, I performed sort of a prototype of this piece.
Well, this is an act. I mean, it absolutely has a visual component that's so strong, it's just a kick to watch. Listeners should really imagine we have two tables that are roughly 8 feet long each. They're at 90-degree angles to each other, and there are six sort of the compact boomboxes on them. They're about, 15, 16 inches long, maybe 6 inches high, and 4 or 5 inches deep, each stereo. And so we have six of them lined up on one table, six on the other. Phil is behind the boxes, and as he's playing into the microphones and switching the buttons, he then dances to the next machine. And then when he gets to the end of this 90-degree row of 12 boomboxes, he skips back to the beginning to begin the next part of the loop, of the wave of sound. And it really is that wave of sound. And at one point, you reverse direction and then skip some boxes, and then pretty soon you were you had filled out the wave into kind of a solid sound, and that's when you started to bring it down. It really is a sight as well as a sound.
that was really organic. I wasn't thinking of how it looked when I first did it, although I guess after I, you know, by the time I got to perform it in public, I realized that this is really going to look, I think I just thought it was going to look mad. Hadn't occurred to me that it would actually look beautiful. That people started saying, like, "Oh, wow, it's like, yeah, whatever." I don't think anybody mentioned davening, but people did mention yoga. you sort of become, especially when you're about ready to start the piece, you have to sort of like get yourself in sync with that loop. And in this piece, it's just in most of these live pieces, it's breathing.
Yeah.
So you have to get yourself in a breathing cycle, and it's funny because actually this is a 30-second loop, so that's in and out twice, so it's like 7.5 seconds, 7.5, 7.5, 7.5. This one's actually a little hard. The ones I do that are 20 seconds, those are easier because it's only a 10-second cycle I'm filling instead of a 15. The 15, you really have to reach and get to the bottom of your lungs. But I'm sorry. very much.
Yeah, that's all right. You are certainly out of breath.
It'll come back.
20-minute piece, and you were nonstop, not only moving but also breathing into the harmonics and to produce the sound. Again, this is a very visual aspect of it that our listeners would be interested in. You were actually sweeping across the microphone input of the boombox.
Right, the microphone doesn't move, so I have
right.
to.
So you lean into it. So you kind of it's almost a kind of a Tai Chi motion that you're using. You're moving across the front of the boombox with this harmonica, and then as you swing to that, then your hands are totally un-Tai Chi, like they're mad on the buttons to make everything work right, and then you suddenly return to that almost contemplative swing of the body across the boombox as you dance to the next one.
Have you used different length cassettes in this piece? I mean, in terms of 20 seconds, 30 seconds, and maybe 60 seconds.
With the harmonica pieces, the 30 has been my favorite. I've tried the 20s. Actually, come to think of it, the very first time I ever performed, I was using a one-minute loop, so that made for a really stately, long piece.
But I mean, with different timed.
Oh, you mean
in different
boom
boxes?
One piece have different. No, I've never done that. I mean, that would create such chaos instantaneously that.
Right.
Just didn't appeal. It would definitely do something. It's interesting, though, when I buy new boxes of loops, I know when I used to buy them, they'd be very uniform, and lately, I won't mention the brand, but when I buy them, like, it'll be 20 seconds, then the next one will be about 21, the next one will be like 19 and a half, and it's sort of like, that's ruins. I have to actually, like, go through many of them and measure them to get them, because you want them to be... to fit together to start with.
But well, we'll put you on to a good guy who's right out there in Brooklyn, who's a loop cutter? Who winds them for us. And he's got really accurate, so we'll put you on to that. So, what's up next? Do you want to play a cut from something recorded so you can take a breather? Or
yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay.
Either something from the album, or I can play, give you that the chamber piece if you want.
Yeah, that's a different take. Give us a little background on that, and then we'll go to it.
Okay, this is a piece I wrote for the Bang I Can All-Stars. this premiered in 77 and is on a forthcoming record.
1997.
Oh. I'm sorry. 70, yeah, right.
How old were you then?
When I was a child, I wrote this piece. I'm just totally out of it. Yeah, it was premiered a year and a half ago and will be released on a label to be named later this year.
Okay, great. And this is called?
Exquisite Corpses.
And why Exquisite Corpses? Is it based on the game?
It wasn't originally. When I started writing sections and then piecing them together. But it's a thing I like to do when I'm playing with MIDI is, you know, I'll start to put you know, like little ostinati together, little riffs together, and I'll fill the palette up, much like I do with the boomboxes. And then when I'm done, a way of linking to the next one would be to take, say, not the primary idea, but like idea number 7. Extract that and then build a new piece on that.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to put them end to end. They seem to fit together, but you're not quite sure how. And that's sort of how I wrote this piece. I was also thinking of dead people when I wrote it, which is a whole other story. But yeah, the piece actually does sort of like fold section to section. I didn't intend it that way, but once it got going, it just sort of happened. So.
Well, let's let you take a breather here in Studio A while we reorganize. And in the meantime, we'll be back in about 12 minutes. Here's Phil Klein's new piece, Exquisite Corpses. Thank you. we're back live in the studio with Phil Klein. That was Exquisite Corpses, played by the Bang on a Can All Stars. That's a forthcoming release, and when forthcoming and on what label, we don't know.
That's right. Later this year, not exactly sure.
And now a special, a Calvos and Damien special event. Damien will join Phil Klein in a piece which will be worked out on the spot here. You have the rules, you have the structure, you have the idea. So let's have a little background on it, and then we'll hear it.
Well, we've got a 20-second loop. So I guess just choose your sound, and you know how to operate the controls?
Well, sure. But we have a name first for it.
Yes, here it is. Dante's Infurniture, a new piece by Phil Klein with Damien.
It's a good start.
Good start.
Hi, I'm Phil Klein. You're listening to Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar, your red alert for new music.
Here on
WGDR, Plainfield. Wow, okay, Dante's Infurniture. You had a lot of Infurniture in that.
Yeah, well, it's not as easy as one might think.
So I suspect.
It looks like any idiot could do it, but...
But no, there's a lot of coordination involved, and then there's also the problem of getting one's mustache caught in a harmonica.
So you did that, did you?
I did that.
Excellent. I'm so glad to hear it.
That's when I switched from harmonica to my moaning.
Wow. Well, we have, while you're sort of turning the knobs there, tell us what's coming up next in your performances or where you're headed.
You talking about now, my career, life, that kind of thing?
Your career, your life, afternoon. Your, yeah, whatever.
Well, let's see. I've got a couple of things coming up in the fall. I'm both producing and performing a show at the New Museum for Contemporary Art in New York, which is along with some of my composer buddies in New York, me, Annie Gosfield, Nick Didkowski, Eve Baglarian, Judy Dunaway, David First. Those are the names that immediately spring to mind.
Yeah, well, about half of those folks have been on our show. We're all doing
covers of our favorite bad tunes.
Yeah.
That's the concept. It's a program called There's Nothing Wrong With Your Radio, and we'll see what happens. I know Eve Baglarian has already said that she's going to cover Barry White. And I think Nick is going to do Smoke in the Water, but he might have been kidding. I hope he's not kidding.
And who's doing Engelbert Humperdinck?
I don't know. Well, maybe that'll be me. But, and then I've got a couple of large outdoor performances. On October 30th, the day after the anniversary of the stock market crash, I'm doing a piece for a large number of boomboxes at the New York Stock Exchange called Crash. And that'll be outdoors Saturday evening, 7 o'clock. And then I'm doing another outdoor piece. I do one every Christmas in the village. We start in Washington Square and go over to Tompkins Square. And that will be on, I think it's Saturday the 19th. You'd have to check the calendar in December. It's either the 19th or the 18th. It's the Saturday a week before Christmas. And that'll start at 7 o'clock in Washington Square. And other than that...
When you say it starts in Washington Square, it's a mobile piece?
Yes. Yeah, we all start the boomboxes simultaneously and then start walking.
Oh.
The same thing with the one on the stock on Wall Street.
Incredible, yeah.
That'll be out. an initial public offering of public disobedience there.
Yeah, do you have to get permits to parade with boomboxes?
If I asked for a permit, it would certainly be denied, so I just do it.
Yeah, what's it like performing in Rudy's Town?
Actually, no one's bothered me. The streets are cleaner, and, no, it's never really been an issue in New York. I'd say I get about an equal number of people people just come by and go, hey man, what's this? And then somebody usually says, ah, it's art. And I go, oh, okay, and they walk away.
Oh, that'll make everybody walk away.
Some people join, and, we get hassled by, heckled would be more like it. Usually by, a street person who just starts, I don't know.
Sermonizing.
Yeah, usually nothing angry, but sort of semi-disruptive in a good-natured kind of way. We had a guy do that last year, joined us for about a block. But, that's one thing about New York, is that these people have seen a lot. Most people just walk by, look at it for a second, and they have no expression at all. They just keep walking. Ah, 60 people with boomboxes.
Well, we don't have the opportunity to play it today, but we're gonna catch up a little bit more on your stuff next. We're gonna play again the piece from Alternative Schubertia. Mm-hmm. You did mention it briefly before. Give us a little rundown on that piece, and we're listening to the background right now. By the way, is 96 Tears. So give us a little bit about 96 Tears, a little bit about Franz
in the Underworld.
In the Underworld, that's what it was, right?
Yeah, 96 Tears, of course, that doesn't have any boomboxes in it. That's just an instrumental piece. And I was sort of going a little bit for turning the musicians as human tape loops. There's a fair amount of that involved when you're doing these pieces. You have to start to think like a loop, sort of like you're playing some game show and the assignment is what would a loop do? But with 96 Tears, the musicians, they sort of have a row to play, if you want to call it that. But their instructions are, first of all, I tell them to play at an
an undefined but very, very slow tempo of their own imagination.
Right.
And I tell them, like, look at your eight notes. Imagine that each of those eight notes has an on and an off switch. Start with them all turned off, except one. So whatever your tempo is, that many beats of silence, that many beats of silence. Then play that one note, then five more measures of silence, whatever that measure is. And then after a time or two, add another note. Then keep doing that. Then when we get to the point where you're playing almost all of your notes, you can add one neighbor note of your choosing. Then you can start to bend notes. So they have these sort of plastic instructions.
Yeah.
But amazingly enough, you get
to such a rich piece from that.
Well, you get to the point where, you know, it's, you know, you just sort of like raise your hand just slightly, and they somehow get, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, it's amazing how they follow you. You begin to read each other's minds. Like, oh, I think he's just gone into phase two, so now I will too.
Yeah.
And especially when you get into the note bending, it becomes this communal sort of like everybody's going, so you're telling everybody, don't pay attention to everybody else. Don't pay attention to anybody else at all. But you know that they will. Because they're human beings and they cannot help but be drawn into what other people are doing. So I don't tell them that part. If you told them that part, it would ruin them. Never tell them that what they've done was good either. Because then they'll make a pre-decision about what to do next time. You know, just like, you want them to be as random as you can get, and that's only so much. The Schubert piece. That was something I'd wanted to do for a long time, was get a bunch of downtown people together and do pieces based on Schubert. I just love it.
Was that your idea?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I produced that show. Schubert's one of my favorite people in the whole universe who ever existed.
And really? He was always avant-garde, ahead of his time a little bit?
Not only, but it's a more personal thing. There's something about Schubert's music, and not, you know, like, I mean, I love Bach, I love Beethoven, I love Stravinsky, but there's something about Schubert that touches you in this very elemental, even heartrending way, as a friend in need. You know, he was obviously a very needy person emotionally, and it comes through in the music. And so, I don't know, I just, in his own lifetime, they had these Schubert evenings, you know, Schubertias, and I just thought, like, yeah, it'd be really cool to get some people together, and I started asking people, and we just did it. I guess that was, like, 2 years ago, and then Jody Dalton at CRI, when he heard, you know, when I was talking about putting the show together, he said, oh, can CRI sponsor it? That would be cool. And he suggested doing the record, so that's how that happened. And it was a real sort of like, Andy Hardy type of, hey, we got some costumes in the barn, let's do it. We all produced those pieces in our own homes. You know, those were all done in our home studios, on our Macintoshes, you know, like, we basically brought the thing in for, I don't want anybody to know that we did it for nothing, but we did.
Oh,
Well, record companies will say, okay, then you can do it for nothing next time, yeah. And so, yeah, my piece was like the purest fancy. I just took the trill from the last piano sonata. This ominous, disturbing bass trill in that piece that seems to symbolize some kind of like crack in the beauty of existence behind which there's something really disturbing. And I just took that crack as the opening to go down there. That's all it's about. Are we playing that now?
No, we're playing 96.
I can't hear what's going on.
Right.
So.
Well, we didn't have an opportunity to actually hear Hans in the Underworld. You didn't have the material for that. Do you have that material with you here?
Yeah, I could play that. It would take me a minute or two to set it up.
Yeah, about how long is it when it's...
It's a six-minute piece.
6 minutes. Well, let's play out 96 Tears, and by the time that's done, we can play Hans in the Underworld. Here it is, the rest of 96 Tears, and then we'll be back.
See if I can get those together in time.
96 Tears by Phil Klein. That's on an absolutely wonderful CD. You really have to go out and get this one. It's called Glow in the Dark. It's on CRI. And I'll tell you, you will never dream the same after you've heard this CD. There are a couple of recordings that that you and I have real sort of interesting reactions to. One of them is certainly Paul Reuter's and some of his orchestral music. They're very dense and such.
True enough.
Yeah.
Yes, and they, I think they're both on our island list.
Yes, our top 100 or top 60.
Yes, whatever.
Yeah, didn't you get harassed by somebody recently?
I did. From OO Discs, where were the other 40? And I told them, yes, they were OO Discs, but I had to use them as building materials for my Quonset hut. And they became the foundation of that, and they are still there. When I left the island, I left them intact, and the foundation of the Quonset hut on the island on which I was marooned is in fact composed of 40 OO discs.
So you'll have all the OO discs as the Quonset hut, and playing in the Quonset hut will be Glow in the Dark by Phil Klein on CRI.
None other.
Well, Phil's setting up for us the Urtext version of Frogs in the Underworld, the one on the alternative Schubertiad recording is actually done in MIDI. Is that right?
Yeah, it's more or less playing straight out of the computer, right, in like six channels.
And this is instead your Urtext version, as it were, the really accurate.
Your typical 12 boombox version.
Yes, the one that in 200 years when the musicologists are working very hard to reconstruct the original instrument. An original instrument recording of Franz in the Underworld.
They'll have fun too. So all boomboxes are not alike.
We're sliding those last two
we're getting there.
Into place.
Maybe we should have, if you can think while you talk, or...
Sure.
Where, after your performances in October, what are your long range plans? I mean, do you aspire to the presidency or anything as bizarre as that?
Well, nothing other than detritus.
Detritus. Well, we also aspire to that. Yes.
To just be able to keep doing music one sort or another. I sort of like to. I like my boomboxes, and I like writing for them, but I also like writing for human musicians as well. And there are a number of things I'm involved in. I've been writing some music for films and television. And
oh, so that would be your day job?
Doing some writing. Yeah, that's my current day job.
Wow.
It's okay.
What do you mean? It pays money. You're doing music.
What
money?
That's the thing. Yeah, that was
doing music and getting paid. Oh,
doing slightly reprehensible music, but getting paid for it.
And slightly reprehensible royalties.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I've got to make sure. There are pieces on both sides of these tapes, so I got to make sure I don't put them upside down. I think we're almost there. But
all right. Well. While you're getting the last of the buttons pushed, Phil Klein, thanks really, really very much for coming
from your
vacation to join us on the Bazaar.
A vacation within my vacation. Yeah, it would have been just fine if it wouldn't have been for the traffic coming across on Route 9. That was just, I got caught behind a Winnebago.
Ooh.
Took me about an hour and 15 minutes to get across the state, and then about another hour to go 100 miles an hour up the interstate.
And then you arrived a little late, and you went right to the studio.
Yeah, I was afraid. Jesus,
to lunch.
I thought, what if I go straight to his house and he's already gone? Then I'll be lost.
You'll
I don't
be lost.
Know what to do.
Oh no.
Okay.
Are we ready?
Just about.
Okay.
All these unruly children here.
It's still a scene, folks. For those of you who come in late to the show, we have 12 boomboxes that Phil Klein is performing with here, and he's about to play Franz in the Underworld.
We'll just see if this works.
Here we go. Phil Klein, Franz in the Underworld. was Frogs in the Underworld, Phil Klein. Wow. Hey, that brings us pretty much almost to the end of the show today. We better switch our microphones back so we can play play the Stravinsky we have queued up, and we just flop it over there and turn these microphones on.
Oh, very well.
Yeah, here we go. And
now you should explain why we're playing Stravinsky.
Yeah, because we had started a couple of weeks ago our countdown in 4-year increments to the new century, and we've chosen one piece from every one of those 4-year periods. Unfortunately, we kind of got squeezed out, and we haven't had the opportunity to play them because we've had such great guests in the past while. Well, I wouldn't say exactly lengthy guests, but in lengthy.
Yes, that's the better kind. Yeah.
So we'll just wrap up the show today. Thank Phil Klein again for joining us. And if you missed part of the show, you'll really want to listen to the archived version. It'll be up in a week or two on the Calvos site, calvos.org, or www.goddard.edu, and go to the WGDR site. Next week, no guest.
No?
No. James Bond was going to join us on tape. Instead, he's going to join us live in 3 weeks. He'll be here in 3 weeks. He is now an official academic who will be teaching in Boston. So he'll join us in 3 weeks. And until next week,
it's been enough.
A production, 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 a production,